Well, it's a conversation with U.S. congressional candidate Dr. Rick Becker on the show today. Welcome to Hidden Agenda, everybody. My name is John Roberts, David Waterman with Midwest Public Health Coalition in the studio, and of course, Paul, the producer. And Hidden Agenda today brought to you by Executive Properties. Are you still putting off that project around the house that's been bugging you forever? Do you think you can wait until spring and call a contractor and have the work done ASAP? Well, good luck with that. Executive Properties has openings right now to get that project done. In fact, you can check out their Google reviews. Aaron says Chris and his team did a spectacular job on the damage to my aunt's garage and siding. Kept us up to date on the progress, and the finished product was amazing. Thank you for your professionalism and hard work. Hey, get that project done sooner than later. Call Executive Properties, 701-330-1273. All right. Oh, here we go. Again, back to Hidden Agenda. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call or text. Our number here at the studio is 701-213-0863. Again, 701-213-0863. And let's do it. Let's get it out of the way. Here we go. Our daily segment called Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. Here we go. Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. You know, marriage is when a man and a woman become one. Marriage is when a man and a woman become one. Now, the trouble starts when they try to decide which one. Or maybe this one was a little better than that one. There we go. Okay, I'm going to do my little thing here, what I do before every Hidden Agenda. First off, we'll kick it off with Joe's disapproval rating. We're talking about our president, Joe Biden. 62%. His approval rating is at 35%. Now, Joe Biden, if you didn't know this, the least popular president in 70 years, even behind Nixon and Carter.
Wow.
Wow, how about that?
Wow.
Donald Trump holds an advantage over Biden in the campaign. Trump is at 49% right now. Biden is at 43%. We're going to be talking a little bit later on. Now, we mentioned the conversation with U.S. congressional candidate Dr. Rick Becker. We'll be talking about the border and everything. But speaking of that, illegal aliens costing Americans billions of dollars. We all know that. In fact, the U.S. spends $451 billion annually due to the invasion at the U.S. border. But they're costing us money in unpaid medical bills. These guys are all coming across and give them everything they need, but they're not going to pay their medical bills. 3.2 million illegals in 2023 alone. Isn't that something? I don't know if you've seen what's going on at like Columbia University and stuff now. Professors, instructors, teachers, rioting, if you want to call. I'm going to call it a riot.
It's a riot.
It should be treason. They should be all, or maybe not treason, but they should all be, in my opinion, arrested. They're you know, denouncing the United States, death to U.S. citizens, death to the USA. Screw those people. And then one more little thing that really gets me to question, Islam is the religion of peace. That's what they've always tried to say. Islam is the religion of peace. I don't know about that.
It depends on how you define peace.
Right. I think we can now go to Rumble. We are going to be leaving Facebook and YouTube, all right?
So, because we're going to talk about stuff they don't allow.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's right.
It's crazy what is happening. Do you think, David, that maybe there's times the United States, should they just keep their nose out of some of this business, or really it's in our best interest to not? I mean, we look at the Ukraine, we look at Israel, we look at all these places around the world, and it's causing a buttload of problems in our country when it's not in our country.
So that's a good question. You know, that's really good. We should have some some experts on the show to talk about that, because the question really, I think, John, that you're asking is, when do we get involved with foreign affairs and when do we not?
Right.
When do we interject our money, our military, our intelligence into a situation somewhere else in the world, and when do we keep to ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really good, I mean, that's a question that I think has been debated by people a lot smarter than we are for a long time. My position is this, that it's, I don't like the idea of kingdom building. you know, mm-hmm. for us to go in and install somebody like the Shah of Iran, because the Shah of Iran was
sure.
was put there by the U.S. The yep. CIA yep. went in, they did their thing, and they installed this guy who ended up being a disaster. My very limited knowledge of American history in that regard is that every time we've done that, anywhere around the world, it ends up being a disaster.
Yeah. What about something like Nippon? You know, we go destroy Japan, we rebuild Japan,
yeah.
and now Japan owns half of our country. I mean, you know, well, but I don't think we have to worry about them turning on us, so either.
That's not, yeah, and right. No, that wasn't, I mean, that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
How did that come to be that Japan owns half the country?
They wanted to take us over. They did
in World War II.
Yeah,
they had a plan to take over the whole world, right? They wanted to do that. They had globalist expansion goals, and you know what? It didn't work out so well for them.
No, and so did we.
I think they regretted it after Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Well, sure. And do they consider themselves lucky now that we were at least nice enough to pick them up, dust them off, and rebuild them?
I don't know. That's a good. I don't know if they think about it anymore.
Yeah, well.
I mean, we did the same thing, really, with some companies in Germany. Aeroflex is a company that used to make they still do. They don't make movie cameras anymore. They don't make 16 and 35 millimeter movie cameras, but they used to make the best cameras in the world. Mm-hmm. And during World War II, one of the greatest prizes of an American journalist would be if we'd wiped out some Nazi outpost mm-hmm. and there were Nazi reporters there with their cameras, because they were shooting with Aeroflex cameras. Our guys were shooting with Bolexes or Bell and Howells, mm-hmm. and they were okay. Those are American cameras, but Bolex is made, I think, in Switzerland. But anyway, if they found an Aeroflex 16-millimeter movie camera, they would grab it and drop their camera in a heartbeat, because
The
16-millimeter Aeroflex was a phenomenal tool. Steady, mm-hmm. rock-solid images came out of that camera. So that was a good company, but the Aeroflex factories were bombed during World War II and destroyed, and taxpayer dollars rebuilt Aeroflex in Germany after the war. Now, I'm partial. I mean, I'm biased on this issue as a filmmaker myself,
mm-hmm.
because Aeroflex still makes some of the best. They moved at some point from making 35 millimeter film cameras to making digital cameras, and the Aeroflex Alexa is considered the top camera in Hollywood. It's like the camera that all the big filmmakers. I mean, it's a $100,000 camera.
Wow!
And it's phenomenal. It is. It's a phenomenal camera. Not as good as the ones we use made by Canon, but that's a whole other story. Canon, by the way, a Japanese company.
Yeah. Nikon.
And talking about Aeroflex, I mean, you've actually got a couple of their lights here in the studio. Yeah.
Well,
those two lights are made by Aeroflex.
Great lights. The bulbs are about $1,100 a piece. And they've guaranteed to last all of 2 weeks.
but they're great lights.
Oh, they are. They are. Yeah. I know people that have come out of here sunburned before.
They're almost good enough to make me look good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. But the thing that really kind of that irritates the crap out of me is, you know, now they just passed this like $95 billion bill to send more aid over to Ukraine.
Right.
And I'm just like, you know, why are we sending all this money to help them at their border? Ours are wide open, and we can use that money to get people, homeless people off the streets. We can use it to support our vets. We can bring all of our military home, because, I mean, contrary to belief, I don't think that any other country in the world poses a threat to us at all. So why even be over there just meddling on all their different affairs? I mean, why not, you know, you talk about like Israel has that Iron Dome. Well, I mean, if America just keeps all of our troops here and we just build up our military in U.S. soil, nobody would have a chance of even getting in anyway.
When we build up our military on U.S. soil? Oh, you mean here?
Yeah, just keep everything here and quit sending everything all over throughout the world and meddling in all their affairs and just focus on us.
Right. So, it's like, I think it's a complicated issue. If, for example, let's just shift to Taiwan. Taiwan is currently a free country, right? They're a self-governing nation, and we do good trade with Taiwan. I mean, Taiwan is a great trading partner for the United States. It's not communist. It's a free country, but it's positioned very strategically in
right between all the crap.
Right between all the and so China is frothing at the mouth to get their claws on Taiwan. And it's a little kabuki dance that we're doing right now because they know that the U.S. has said, don't even think about it. And yet they're going, but Joe Biden, not a very strong president.
No, no.
Maybe we can take him anyway. Yeah, better watch out. They're trying to figure out if they can do a military action against Taiwan and take over that country, because that would not only hurt our the trade that we do with Taiwan would continue, because just like trade that we do with China, although it's also that China can take over America. I mean, they want U.S. dollars. Their economy is flagging. I mean, they're in big trouble in China. Their economy is in worse shape than ours is, if you can believe that. But they would obtain a strategic military advantage if they were able to take over Taiwan.
Yeah.
That would be very, very bad for the United States. So therefore, we have a vested interest as a nation that wants to keep its national sovereignty. At least we do.
Sure.
I'm not saying everyone in Washington does, because they're willing to sell it down the road for a song. But most Americans want to keep our sovereignty. So if China takes over Taiwan, we would be at grave danger for any military action that they want to do against us. And so it's in our best interests to help defend Taiwan and to let it be known that we're going to send ships, we're going to send troops in there if someone tries to militarily attack Taiwan.
And see, I think the next 7 months are very crucial for the United States because of what you said about Joe Biden, not very strong. And these other countries, it's obvious that they're on to that. They know he's no Donald Trump. So that's what scares me the next 7 months. Now, I'm very confident, like Paul brought up, that, let's just keep our guys here and whatever. I'm very confident the United States would kick the crap out of any other country if they want to declare war on us. But it's the Iraqs, Russias, North Koreas, and Chinas that they're just dumb enough, just a little deranged enough to maybe try something, try to attack the country.
For sure. And especially a country that has I think the United States and Russia, like during the Cold War, when China got nukes, why is it that we were not too fearful of starting a nuclear war with either of those two countries? So they're both communist countries, which means that they're both godless countries, which means that they have no fear of God and they have no belief in an afterlife. So for those guys, this is all they've got, right?
Yeah, right.
And so if the whole concept of MAD, mutually assured destruction, is that if they launch against us, we launch against them, we blow them away, and their country's gone and they're dead.
Right.
And so the leaders were going, well, this is all we got. We better make the most of it. Right. So they don't want to die.
Yeah.
So that worked. But now when you bring in countries that have this idea of martyrdom, if they're willing, if they can go and end up in some place where they got 70 dark-eyed virgins just waiting for them.
Sure.
And that if what they do, the actions that they do, please their God, that he's going to reward them with 70 or 40 or 50 or 10, or I mean, no virgin deserves that. But if that's going to be the reward, if they die in the process of fighting this holy war, that becomes really scary, because they don't care about their life here.
Yeah.
They've got this paradise waiting for them.
Go
if they kill a bunch of infidels.
Right. Go take care of all those virgins when there's you're blown up into about 50 pieces. See how good that works for you.
So
I had to get that in there. I just had to.
So anyway, it's complicated. As I've mentioned on the show before, we have we've got billions of dollars worth of assets in the Middle East, and Israel acts as a protectorate of those. I mean, they defend Israel defends our assets in the Middle East in a way that would cost us so much more money than the money that we send to Israel for their military, right? So it's cheap insurance that we have over there. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, if you, you know, in your neighborhood, if I bought a little piece of land there and I don't have the time, I put something valuable on that land and I don't have time to go and oversee it myself, and you're right next to it, and I say, hey, look, John, can I give you $50 a month and you just kind of keep an eye on that and let me know if anything happens? And if it does, grab your shotgun and go after it. Would you do that? And you go, sure. But I can hire my own security and pay them $300 a month to go circle the perimeter and just be there all the time. Well, what's going to be better for me? And then my wife starts complaining. Why are you sending $50 a month to John to watch your? Well, because it's going to cost $300 if we hire someone else.
Sure,
he's right there. He's right there. He's my friend. He'll watch it for me. I mean, this is what I'm giving him is that's nothing for
beer
the
money
for the value that we're getting out of his service to just watch our stuff and protect it and defend it. And that's the situation with the U.S. and Israel. Not to mention that we're allies of Israel.
Right.
You know, we're supposed to take care of our friends. So then you ask, how does this what's going on? What's the deal with Ukraine? That's a whole different story. I mean, that's a whole different story. And the money that we're sending to Ukraine is shameful because that money is a lot of it's just going to a black hole. We don't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, we have some
idea. That's just it. We don't know where a lot of it's going.
And you get a guy like Zelensky, who was literally an actor before he was installed as the president. I mean, he was an actor, some kind of comedian.
I'm going to say he's a rich actor right now.
He's a very, very rich actor. And I think that there's just, look, you know, when you get free American money and you don't have to do anything for it except say, I need more money.
Yeah, right.
And it pours in by the billions. Mm-hmm. You think there's not going to be a good deal of corruption, especially when we have no oversight.
Yeah, right, right.
Anyway, that's a whole other show. But so people are saying, I thought that Rick Becker, who's running for U.S. Congress, was going to be on this show. Where is he? I don't see him. He'll be here in about 7 minutes, maybe eight.
Okay.
Maybe,
You know, it's funny how you mentioned Zelensky being an actor. What's the deal with actors and drama teachers? Because look who's running Canada. He was just a drama teacher. That's all he was. A high school drama teacher. And now he's the premier of Canada. I wonder why all my Canadian friends think he's a dumbass.
Yeah, I think that he's also related
son of
to
Fidel Castro.
Fidel Castro. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. inherited some of his predilections about ruling people, didn't he?
Yeah. It's a weird deal.
And then we get guys like this Joker in California. What's his name? Gavin Newsom.
Oh, yeah.
Nuisance. What's his name?
Yeah.
That guy. Anyway.
My cousin calls him the used car salesman.
He calls him Newsom. He's a. And he thinks that. When you get anybody who in the supposedly free world who says that they admire the way that Xi Jinping runs China.
Yeah, right.
Organ harvesting from people that are completely healthy and young and just because they're your political adversary, you can, cut out their organs and sell them? He admires that? This is worse than, I mean... This
you had to clean the shit off of the streets so he could, so Xi Jinping could come visit California.
And you know, I get Governor Newsom and the guy up in Canada confused because they're so similar in terms of how they think, and they both lie.
They both just look like pricks.
Yeah. One more thing in the news that we haven't talked about, but I wanted to bring it up. Back in 2020, when just because we're talking about liberals and Oregon, back in 2020, they passed that new law where made the personal use possession of illicit drugs such as heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine only punishable by a ticket and a maximum fine of $100, making, you know, basically saying it's okay to do.
In Oregon, you said?
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. And now they've changed their tune just a little bit. Under the new law, they're going to recriminalize small amounts of hard drugs. Under the new law, small amount of drugs such as heroin or meth will be misdemeanor and punishable by up to 6 months in jail. So how about that? They're finally going to do something about it. But yeah,
but the thing is, I would see, John, I don't applaud that because they should have done that. Why didn't they do that a long time ago? Here's the thing. Things happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen for a reason. In politics, things happen for a reason. It was either Kennedy or Johnson who said, if something happens in politics, you can be sure it was planned to happen that way. Nothing happens by accident. Things don't just happen. They're thought out, planned out, and then that plan is executed, and then we see it happen. So when you think COVID, 9/11, Pearl Harbor, there's a lot of stuff that the American people don't know. Maybe some of it's better that they don't know. President Trump promised when he was running in 2016 that he would declassify all the documents surrounding President Kennedy's assassination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And once he saw them for himself, he changed his mind.
Yeah.
And said he's not going to do that. And I don't know why he changed his mind, but I can guess that maybe what he saw would so undermine the American public's confidence in either the U.S. government or certain government agencies,
right,
that he decided that the fallout from that wouldn't be worth it.
Well, let's face it, there was a lot of fans of Kennedy back then. I mean, you know.
A lot of fans of Kennedy. And so the question is, who killed him? By the way, spoiler alert, it was not Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it was either.
Lee Harvey Oswald did not. It's a virtual impossibility for Lee Harvey Oswald to have shot President Kennedy from the book depository. It just could not mm-hmm. happen that way. And we've talked about that before, so we don't have to go into it. I want to talk just briefly about the border before we invite by the power of technology and time shifting techniques that we have, Dr. Rick Becker on the show. You mentioned the border. Why is that going on? It's not like President Trump was building border wall, and then all of a sudden, when Biden came in, all of a sudden, all the money went away, all the tools and materials all went away. It didn't happen like that. For anyone that doesn't know, here's what happened. Biden got in. He immediately halted all construction of the border wall. He mm-hmm. immediately he halted it.
Mm-hmm.
The materials that were purchased to build the border wall and paid for,
yep,
he sold for pennies on the dollar.
Yep.
Now he's saying, I need more money to build that border. What?
Yeah. And that was all Trump's fault, too.
And that's all Trump's fault.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Everything is.
Everything's Trump's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a friend of mine who got a speeding ticket the other day, and that was Trump's fault.
I do want to mention one more thing because I kind of forgot about it, but there's been a few names thrown out there for a possible running mate for Trump. Burgum is climbing that list, which kind of scares me.
That scares me.
Everybody was worried about. Everybody was thinking this Kristi Noem from South Dakota. Well, did you see her new book?
No.
She admitted that she had a hunting dog that was no good, worthless. So she took it out to a gravel pit and shot it.
Okay.
I think she lost a few of her.
Oh boy!
Yeah,
she would lose.
You don't just admit to taking your dog out because he was worthless and shooting and killing it.
Was he worthless as a dog, or was he worthless as a hunting dog?
I think the hunting part of it, but
That's not good.
No.
No, Chrissy, I
liked her for a while, but I'm a dog guy.
Run that. I am too. I'd say, Chrissy, run that past us the next time before you put out a statement like that.
Sure, sure. Yeah, for dumb.
I mean, wouldn't you have advised her a little differently?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you would,
I would
think
have said, don't shoot the dog.
Yeah, you think if you're governor, you would have a press secretary or whatever that would say, you know what, hey, you got your new book. Of course I'm going to read it. Then I would think you would say, well, if I were you, I wouldn't really talk about this fourth paragraph in chapter 8, the one where you kill your dog.
So
I probably wouldn't do that.
So just to be clear, just to be fair, Did you read the book?
No, I haven't. Just been reading the fallout.
Okay, did you read the portion of where she kills her hunting dog?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
yet.
Yeah. So I wouldn't. I mean, depending on where you got that information, I wouldn't jump to too quickly because
taken out of context.
It could have been taken out of context.
I've heard a lot about it from a lot of people, and then when my wife texted me this morning about it, then I knew she had watched it or read about it. And she's pretty sharp on this kind of stuff, so I will believe her. But right. I had heard about it. I'd heard rumblings about it. I'm not going to read her book. But I had heard something about it. Then my wife finally found out more. But anyway, for a different show.
I wouldn't put it past her.
No. Well, I mean, she's kind of a cowgirl, rough and tough, motorcycle, Sturgis, whatever. Yeah,
but I know guys like that that have animals, and they still don't. They're still humane. I mean, I don't know anybody who shoot a dog because it's no good at a dog show anymore. I mean, right.
So if it bit somebody or if it was a dangerous animal, that's a different story. But if it just doesn't do what you want in the field, find somebody that wants a new companion or do something with it. Try to give it away. I mean, gosh,
exactly.
All that dog probably, all dogs, I mean, any dog I've ever owned, all they want to do is make you happy. So all they want to do is please you.
What's with these politicians all writing books?
I know. Yeah, do your job.
Well, it's like,
wait till you're retired.
They hold. I mean, it's a great way to get invited on a show to talk about their book, right? And talking about dogs, I still like the quote from. I would never do this. I just want to make that clear for anybody that's going to make a big deal about this, but. Dave Munson, who is the owner and founder of Saddleback Leather in Texas, who toured Mexico with his dog Blue for years as a missionary, said, "If you want to find out who's more loyal to you, lock your dog and your wife in the trunk of your car for 2 hours and see which one is happy to see you when you let them out."
Yeah. I will admit, I had a dog. It got kind of embarrassing. My dog used to sniff the crotch of visitors.
Oh, that's unusual.
They'd give me some funny looks, though, because he was a Chihuahua, and I had to lift him up to do it.
John, the jokes my neighbor tells me segment is over. That's we're past that.
There, I just got rid of 2 days' worth now. Oh, boy.
Okay.
You know, something that just came to my mind, too, because we're talking about the border. And, you have the ATF, you have the FBI, the CIA, all these things. But one of the biggest problems that are out there is sex trafficking. Why isn't there a devoted acronym to trying to find these children that are getting sex trafficked and everything?
I think because somebody doesn't want that to happen. I think that it's possible that people in powerful, So I mean, your comment about Newsom or Grusom and Trudeau, I don't care what they look like. I care what they act like, and they act like bad people.
Mm-hmm.
They're bad people. They're bad people. Governor Grusom and Justin Trudeau are bad people, and they should be removed from office.
Yeah,
because they're good people are suffering as a result of their policies and their plans. So
it's like a cross between Uncle Fester and George the Animal Steel, the old wrestler. It's like that kind of looks like. I don't know. Anyway,
yeah. So here's we're going to talk with Dr. Becker about his views on the border, inflation. Maybe we'll get into taxes and why he's running. Why he's running. I'll be honest. I'll tell you. I have followed Rick Becker for years, for at least the last 10 years. He ran for governor once. As a delegate, I voted for him. I think that he has integrity. He really wants what's best for North Dakota. He's not just trying to, you know, pat his own pocket. And I wish that I would have had a chance to talk with him about the what's going on with the UN and the WHO. There is, and we will get into this, I think, John, on our next show. There's a plan right now. There are two treaties that Joe Biden wants to sign next month. And if he signs them and if the Senate allows them, now Dr. Becker is not running for Senate, he's running for House. Mm-hmm. But if those are signed and ratified by our Senate, our country's no longer America.
Right.
We no longer have our Constitution to defend our personal, our individual freedoms. And I just want to say this too, one more thing before we go to the break. What makes America different? I was talking with one of my sons, I won't say who, to protect the innocent or the guilty, who said, yeah, if that happens, if our country gets taken over, he said, I'm just moving to the UAE. I'm going to go to the area because there you can be, you know, you can have, they got a freedom of religion and you can still live freely. That's a very bad idea. Here's what he doesn't understand. Here's what a lot of people don't understand when they talk about, I'm going to just leave the country and go over there or go over there. Most countries in the world, even the ones that we consider to be free, are free because the government in those countries has decided that it's okay for them to do these certain things. Because in those countries, even though they're called democracies or whatever, they believe, the governments in those countries believe, that their people are free because the government allows them to be free. The government allows them to own a car or to drive on the streets or to live in a certain place. But if the government should change their minds and decide, no, we're not going to let you do that anymore, the people have no way to stop them because all power flows from the government to the people. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. The difference between those countries and the United States is that our country was formed, our Constitution was written, our Declaration of Independence was established on this one principle, that human rights, individual human rights, not societal rights, not state rights, not national rights, but individual rights, human rights, are given to us by God, not government, that the government's role is to secure those rights, is to defend the rights that God gave to you, that God gave to me, so that they're not infringed by people who want to hurt us or people who want to control our lives, even if those people hold office in our government. They're saying, no, 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 they can't do that to you because you have certain inalienable rights, meaning that rights that cannot be taken away from you, that are given to you by God. That's a pretty unique concept in the world, and the United States has it, and that is the reason, I believe, that the globalists, the people like Tedros and like George Soros and that whole group has their sights set on America, is because they know that if they can eliminate national sovereignty and our Constitution by hook or by crook, by a treaty, by a massive revolt, by whatever, they can take out America. And then the whole concept of God-given rights is gone from the world. And Israel would be the only place left, and then they're going to attack Israel. We know that from Scripture. So it's a very, very important thing. And so we need to get very good people who have principles in office at every level, including the national level in Congress. And so we're going to hear from Rick Becker when we come back.
All right. So we're going to take a little break here. That conversation with U.S. congressional candidate Dr. Rick Becker and David Waterman coming up right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark Rusted, Grand Forks County Commissioner, here to encourage District 42 residents who value their conservative principles as I do to vote for Representative Claire Corey for Senate. Claire Corey is your only choice for District 42 Senate. Claire Corey has a proven track record of pro-military, pro-tax relief, and pro-small business. Vote for Claire Corey on June 11th.
This is Claire Corey, and I approve this message. Paid for by Claire Corey for Senate.
Good morning. Here we are. Hidden Agenda. And we have a very special guest with us this morning, Dr. Rick Becker, who is running for the U.S. Congress. Good morning, Dr. Becker.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Good morning to you. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for being here. So, Dr. Becker, you have been involved in politics for a while. You're also a licensed medical doctor. You're a plastic surgeon. Can
yep,
you
correct.
Tell me? Yeah, so, and you practice currently.
I do. Yep. I started my practice all the way back in 1997. So it's been 27 years. It's been in Bismarck this entire time. I'm an independent practitioner and have a little ambulatory surgery center as well. So
wow, okay. So so you're a medical doctor, but you've also served in the North Dakota State Legislature.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I in my practice, you know, things were coming along and practice was developing well, but at the same time, starting about 2008, 2009, we are looking at something that was happening on the national level with a financial crisis mm-hmm. and TARP and government bailouts and the Obama presidency coming on and his promise to triple down on all of this government spending, simultaneous with the state government suddenly having this tremendous increase in revenue from oil and then just spending it all. And so I just kind of came to the conclusion, you know, I think I'd like to get involved and try and see if there's anything I can do to make things better. So I ran for the legislature. I was in the state legislature then for 10 years in the state house and had a very good run, garnered a reputation for being a very strong, principled conservative. I started North Dakota's version of the House Freedom Caucus in my first session because it was a shock to me. As a legislator and believing that North Dakota is the strong conservative state with strong conservative Republican leadership, to see what was happening in the state legislature, and which was not consistent with being conservative, not consistent with the Republican platform. And so to try and address this issue, then I formed this caucus where legislators could come together and discuss the principles of liberty, conservatism, the Republican platform, identify how we can further those principles, vote on good bills and kill bad bills. And so, yeah, during those 10 years, several bills I introduced that were passed, I was able to work even with the leadership that was fairly moderate, was able to develop relationships and get good legislation passed, like constitutional carry, like Second Amendment Preservation Act, civil asset forfeiture reform, confidential informant reform. I mean, just requiring search warrants when law enforcement would use drones for surveillance of private citizens. A lot of good things that protect our civil liberties.
So that's fantastic. You have no track record as a federal legislator, but your state legislative track record is pretty, as you've just described, I think, pretty unique. Yeah, because I know other state legislators who go there and they serve, but they don't seem to be really interested in attacking the issues that mm-hmm. would affect people's civil liberties or the budget. That's another issue. So you said promoting good bills, defeating bad bills. How do you define a good bill versus a bad bill? Or just start with a bad bill first, if you prefer. What makes a bill bad?
Something that makes the bill bad is if it decreases our liberty. So that could mean increased taxation. It could mean increased regulation, increased spending. It could mean anything that infringes on the rights we have enshrined in the Constitution.
So in your experience with the state legislature, what was the thing that you found that you said you were surprised because it's supposedly a conservative state and a conservative legislature, you would think, because it's predominantly Republican. What surprised you the most about the attitudes of the other legislators?
Well, to be honest, what surprised me most is that there seemed to be such a willingness to concede to arguments that would give, I guess, that would allow the legislator to go against what they said they believed in or go against the platform. It's the yeah, but. I used to call them the yeah, but Republicans, where you could say, well, hey, in the Republican platform, it says this. And their response is, yeah, but. And it's all, there's always something. It's, oh, well, my, but the mayor of my city really wants this, or my school superintendent really wants that, or these five people that sent me emails want this. And it's like, you were elected based on a platform that you said you would abide by. Therefore, you must abide by that. That's why you were elected. But they're the yeah, but, and that's what I found is that what I found is that principles were not truly principles to a lot of folks. They're guidelines. Mm. And unfortunately, when it was difficult, or when there was pressure, it became obvious they were just guidelines, because you don't follow them when they're just guidelines.
Right. So when you think about, you mentioned taxation, and taxation is obviously directly connected to government spending. I think when a lot of people think government spending, they think, well, the government is spending their money on mm-hmm. this project.
Right.
So who cares? I mean, yeah, that'd be fun to have, but it's really not the government's money, no. Is it? It's really their money.
Yeah. There's no such thing. I always make that correction, probably, you know, that people get tired of me saying that, but when people say, you know, the government, it's spending the government's money, the state's money, the city's money, no. There's no such thing. The government does not have money. The government is holding and spending your money, and usually doing it inefficiently, wastefully, and on things that you would not spend your money on. In fact, they spend it on things that even they would not spend their own money on. That's what drives me nuts. They're happy to spend your money. They're happy to be generous with your money. They're happy to be compassionate with your money. Right. They would never do it with their own money.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right.
Say, really quickly, I just want to jump in on that and point out, because I saw something that was really funny, and it said, there's proof that there's no alien life out there, because if there was, we would have already gave them our money.
Yeah, a statement on foreign aid. That's yeah, good, intergalactic right? aid, exactly.
Right. So is it reasonable for people to expect that first, let me back up. How popular were you with the yeah, but legislators?
I was not popular at all. It's very uncomfortable to be held accountable. Yeah. And especially when the curtain is pulled back and it's shown how blatant it is that you're not abiding by the principles that you say. And so even as a freshman legislator, I had seasoned veteran legislators come up to me to kind of with the tail between the legs and say, hey, Rick, here's why I voted on that. I know I shouldn't, you know, it's like, look, just vote according to what you say you believe. If you believe that it's appropriate to give taxpayer money in the form of corporate welfare and subsidies, then just say so when you're running for office. Yeah. And if the people vote for you based on that, then do it, man.
Then you're embrace representing
it.
Them.
Embrace yes. it. But don't talk one way and then act another way.
Right. Okay, so I'm glad that you said that, because my experience is that as I've talked with state legislators and people that are in positions that they were elected to, and your name comes up, there's a lot less positivity than there is when I talk to citizens of North Dakota who know your record and who know mm-hmm. the kinds of work that you've done in Bismarck. So, and that's really, I think that's a very good thing, because you're not running to represent the ideas or the weaknesses of other state legislators. Right. You're running for the benefit of the people of North Dakota.
Yeah, yeah, I have very strong support in the grassroots, and because yes. the people of North Dakota, the average citizen, the average voter, they're sick of the status quo. They're sick of the old guard, country club, rhino, big spending, big government Republicans.
Right.
They're sick of them. And so anyone like myself comes along that says, yeah, I'm sick of it too. I represent change. I represent the alternative to the status quo. Yes, people like that.
Yeah, and you did it for 10 years yeah. in Bismarck, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got a track record, but you've served in North Dakota for 10 years. You have a successful business as a surgeon. So why do this? I mean, why? Yeah. I've been to Washington D.C. more than once, and it is a swamp. And I've talked with other legislators in Washington and their staff, and the pressures apparently dwarf the pressures that happen at the state level. So why do that? Why not enjoy your life and your family and mm-hmm. and just stay in North Dakota?
Well, that's the $1 million question, David. I feel compelled to. I you know, there's it's what's happening. We're so close to losing our country. We're so close that I just felt called or compelled to try and do what I could to make a change. There are good people in D.C., not a lot, but there are some good people in D.C., and if we can get a few more to join them, maybe, just maybe, we'll have the critical mass to actually change things and get America on the back on the right path.
So the I've got one of your flyer here. Mm-hmm. You're running. Election Day is June 11th.
Yes.
Because you're running against several other candidates running for the same position, correct?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, the voters have a smorgasbord of options in the House race, absolutely.
So Congressman Kelly Armstrong is stepping down to run for North Dakota governor.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're running against these other people. And any of them are welcome, by the way, Julie or Alex or anybody who's running for this position. You're welcome to come on the show and share your views. Let me just go a couple of things. The border crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You say on the issues, this is your position to end the border crisis, to end woke coercion, put America first. You're just, if you're going to run and campaign, this is the standard for decades. Promise things you can't deliver,
mm-hmm.
and act as if once you get there, you're going to be able to wave the magic scepter and make it happen.
Yeah.
And of course, I know that man I voted for president years ago came right out and said, look, the president can't do what they're promising to do, and they can't legally do what they can't do. They have no authority to do that. I'm not going to promise that. If you want to vote for someone who's going to lie to you, vote for them. I'll tell you what I can do, what I can't do, and what I will do when I get to Washington.
Yes.
So,
respond. Well, and there's you're exactly right. There is a tendency and an expectation almost from citizens, and a tendency by candidates to speak as though they're running for an executive type office, as though they have much more control. Running for Congress, you're one of 435 people. But for instance, you brought up the border. What, you know, as a candidate, I want to secure the border. Now, what can I do? Now, yeah. Here's another component to this whole election. We all sound the same. We're all saying the same thing. Oh, we want to secure the border. Right. You know why? Because the polling has been done and it's shown that is the number one or number two concern of people. So yes, oh, we're all the same. We're conservative. We want a secure border. Okay, how can I affect a change in that direction as one of 435? And how do I differ from my opponents? Okay, I recognize I don't have the power just to wave a wand and secure the border, but I understand where the power lies in Congress. So the power for me lies in a vote, my vote, and the ability to convince people in Congress to vote like me, right? And I have a good record of doing that.
Yes.
The power of Congress then is the power of the purse. Congress has the ability to withhold funding, to withhold spending bills, to withhold budgets until we have funding on the wall. So we can force. We have the leverage. The Congress has had the leverage, and they have failed to use it. They have been playing checkers, or even whatever game is worse or less intellectually rigorous than checkers. That's what they've been playing against a White House who has the capability to not do much more. But they have been playing a losing game because they're so weak-kneed and so spineless. They don't use the leverage they have with the support of the American people to secure the border, use that and say, we will not pass any spending packages until we have funding for a wall, funding for a fully secure border. We can do that. Now, as one of 435, I can join up with the other 20 or 25 that are already feeling that way, put pressure on leadership to say, give us a clean bill for securing the border wall. Now, if we have a new president, that'll make it infinitely easier. However, what has happened so far has been a dismal failure. I would suggest that my opponents, although they may have a sentiment of, yes, it'd be nice to have a secure border, are they willing to stand up, not back down? Are they willing to shut down the federal government in order to get a secure wall? I doubt it. I don't think so. They don't have that kind of fight. They don't have the gumption. They're not willing to take the arrows that I've been taking for 10 years.
Right. And they would take arrows for sure.
Absolutely.
Because once you get there and with your track record and your position and your, I would suggest also the values that you've held consistently, you'll immediately become a target of the majority of the media,
yes.
Right? The mainstream media would not like you. And no. They would not be your friend.
Well, they would not be my friend, but they would like me because I would get them ratings, you know, because you need the boogeyman, right? And right. you need to prop up a boogeyman persona, and then you get ratings. So they love to do that. It's interesting because if you have anyone who just stands on principle, they're considered extreme. Isn't that interesting? If you're a principled person, by very nature of standing for principle, you're considered extreme.
Unless the principle that you hold is extreme left, in which case it's not extreme.
Then you're normal.
Yeah. Then you're normal. Yeah. Then you're compassionate.
Yes.
And normal. Yeah, exactly. Right. So regarding the, we have got a short amount of time. We've only got about a little bit more than 10 minutes left. And there's so many things I want to talk to you about. But one of the things, part of being a principled individual is that you hold to your word, correct? You yes. say you're going to vote a certain way. You say that you're going to support something or that you're going to not support something. And then you stick to that mm-hmm. regardless of the pressure that comes down on you or the heat that builds based on whatever other people are doing or saying. Mm-hmm. But principled people consider honesty and truth virtuous traits.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But when we're in a fight against people that have no such value, when they think that that all that's for the communists, for example, mm-hmm. Marxism teaches that whatever it takes to meet the end goal mm-hmm. is by itself virtuous. So if you have to lie in order to meet your goal, that's yeah. what you do.
Saul Alinsky tactics.
Saul Alinsky. So when you're fighting against people who have no rules other than the ones that they create moment by moment as they think best fits them, how do you deal with that?
Well, it's a little difficult because what you'll find is opposition or opponents will distort things, tell lies, and so forth. And you want it's natural to want to defend yourself, right? To clear the record. That's a very, very strong reaction. But in politics, you want to spend very little time doing that because all you're doing then is focusing on the negative that they've brought up, and you're elevating that negative into the awareness of more and more people. And as they say in politics, if you're explaining, you're losing. And so the best thing is to try and ignore and try and reach viewers and listeners, the voters, with the positive message that you have and hope that that resonates more than the lies of opposition.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't want to spend any time on this at all except to let people know that you'll be getting things like this in the mail, as I did today. Mm-hmm. This is an anti-Rick Becker thing. It's got, and I started reading it. I started laughing, actually. I mean, I'm not in your position, but I started laughing when I read some of this stuff because I thought that's because just having other conversations that I've had with you, mm-hmm. I know that these things are not true.
No, they're patently false.
They're patently false.
So what happens there, and very briefly, so it's Pat Finken and Brighter Future Alliance. Yeah. And so he's well known for these tactics. He actually emulates Joseph Goebbels, who is the master propagandist from the Hitler-Nazi yeah. regime. And it was he that talked about, if you repeat a lie often enough, it will become the truth. That's his whole model. So what he's doing, he takes facts, which is, I voted a certain way on a certain bill, yeah. right? That part is true. Yeah. But what he says the bill was about is a complete fabrication, a complete distortion. Yes. So he's able to take a truth and distort it so severely that it's obviously a lie, but he can claim, hey, man, I'm just trying to bring out the truth.
Yeah.
So it's really unfortunate. Pat Finken is really, I think, a blight for North Dakota politics. But it's the nature of things. We just have to move on.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know what? Years ago, I got a thing like this. Only it was about Dan Johnston, mm-hmm. Who I think did you serve with Dan?
Yes,
was he in the legislature? Okay, yeah. And it said that, you know, more taxes for thee, none for me. And I thought, what's this all about? So I thought, you know what? And it said that he failed to pay taxes on a certain year and whatever. I just called him. I said, Dan, what's going on with this? Did you not pay your taxes? He said, yeah, I'll tell you what happened. They sent me a tax bill to the wrong house, mm-hmm. the wrong address. And I didn't find out for a year later when all of a sudden there's this action coming down against me. He said, the first thing he said, I immediately called the tax commissioner's yeah. office. I said, what's going on? They said, we sent you this bill. I said, that's not my address. They said, oh, we're sorry. They waived all the fines, all the penalties, everything. They said, it's our fault. He said, I wrote a check that day for the tax I owed. But, and I'm guessing that Pat Finken knew that.
Oh, he knows full well, yeah.
Do you mind if I interject here for really quick? When I get something like that in the mail, it immediately makes me want to not vote for that person. Just because the mudslinging that goes on, I don't understand. Like, if I got a flyer in the mail that said, you know, this person has done these things that I think that are really great, but I think that I could improve on them in this way. I would have the vote for that person as opposed to the person that's sitting there and just trying to bring down their opponent and just sit there and just like, you know, talk smack or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't you bring out the positivity in the things and then say that I can expand on them?
Yeah. And the way that it works is that I'm glad that you brought that up, Paul, because the way that it works is, say a candidate, so there's no candidate's name on this. It just says paid for by brighterfuturealliance.org or Brighter Future Alliance. And I did check it out and I saw it's Pat Finken that's behind it. And that didn't surprise me. I was not able to find out before the show, who's giving the most money to that
organization. You won't find out,
but I'm not going to stop trying. And so what happens is that rather than the other candidate putting their name on here saying vote for me, they just let some Finken guy do the dirty work for them.
Yeah.
So all you see is Rick's name on this. It was the same thing with the ads that I got against Dan Johnson. And again, they were all lies or all half-truths with a twist so that you fill in the blanks in a way that leads you to a false conclusion. And that's the way that works. So it's really sad. That's where the expression comes from, that politics is dirty, right? So we don't have a lot of time left, but I want to ask, there's so many things. And Dr. Becker, we talk about this all the time on this show. The number of ways that our country, our culture, our economy, mm-hmm. Our society, our military, our liberties are being attacked. It is literally it's like a Ivan Pavlov experiment where, you know, he would submit animals to such intense stress from multiple angles and continue it. So it was nonstop until the animal eventually just gave up. And he said, once it reaches that breaking point, I can make the animal do anything I want. And he handed that report to Joseph Stalin, and he closed the report after reading it and said, you've saved the revolution. I think that's exactly what's happening in the United States right now. The average American is being submitted to so many stresses, so many things. Half the people, I think, or hopefully less than that, are putting up their hands saying, I don't want to hear anymore. I can't handle this. It's just too much for me. But the fact of the matter is, when you say that you think that the future of our country and our liberties is seriously on the line, that's not hyperbole.
No.
This is reality.
It's possible that we've already crossed the threshold of no return. It's possible. The problem is we don't know. We won't know for a few years. Right. And if there's any possibility that we haven't crossed that threshold, we have to fix it immediately. So, you know, that's why we can't just put our head in the sand and say, well, I don't know, it's probably too late. No, we got to fight and fight to the very end.
And so you've got a reputation as a fighter. What if you were going to, it's an unfair question. I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you think is the greatest threat to America right now? I mean, just in the scheme of things. And what is the first thing that you will do when you get to Congress in Washington, D.C. as a new congressman?
Right. We have so many threats, and right, we've got this crazy globalist war, culture war, that's being waged on us, which includes the diversity, equity, inclusion, the ESG, and environment, social governance. Mm-hmm. It's a quasi fascist neo Marxist program. I mean, it's nuts, and the loss of our sovereignty with the World Health Organization and the International Monetary Fund and the World Trade Organization and the United Nations. It's just one thing after another. We really are rapidly losing what it even means to be an American. So that's one aspect. Then you've got the other culture war of this whole mental illness called transgenderism, and that all truth is relative, and really that's about control as well. It's a progressive far left exercise in controlling people, which is really what got Trump elected. That was the time. That was right around that time where we had a sequential number of years where everything that you said, if you spoke what you believed and it wasn't in line with the accepted left narrative, you got squashed. You got called a racist. You got called, you know, a xenophobe, a misogynist. You know, whatever. You couldn't say anything. You're being so trapped into what was acceptable. That's where people said, "That's enough. We want something different. We're going to fight back." Trump got in. So you've got this culture war with the DEI, ESG, transgender. That's another aspect, right? Then we've got our foreign intervention. We are so overextended. This goes into spending as well. But our foreign interventions, our never-ending wars, our manipulation of other economies, other countries, I think is putting us at risk in a number of ways. Then you have the risk of China. You have the risk of Russia. But our number one threat is our debt. We've done it to ourselves. We've done it over the course of decades. And there seems to be no appetite to get it under control because we are so politically weak with our current elected officials. And so when we recognize that the debt problem is becoming more severe because the interest on our debt is increasing and a greater amount of the tax dollars we send in is being allocated to just paying the interest on our debt, and that interest rate is going to continue to increase because our low interest bonds are being turned in and are re-upped for higher interest loans, we're in a very significant world of hurt. Some of our debt is to other nations, and we become beholden to those other nations. That's a security threat in and of itself. But really, defaulting, going bankrupt, whatever it might be, that threatens our society as we know it, and a full breakdown of our society. You know, what we saw with COVID, I think should have sent chills down everyone's spines, because what you're talking about is a very limited and temporary disruption of the supply chain.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Think way right. bigger than that. Yeah. We started becoming animals because we needed toilet paper.
Yeah.
Over almost nothing. So we are hanging on a thread, and you have a complete financial disruption because we're no longer able to sustain this debt. I think that's our number one threat.
So you get to Washington, D.C., and you're one out of 435. Mm-hmm. How do you begin to turn that around? Because these boys have been spending money like there's no tomorrow for a long time.
Boys and girls, David.
Boys and girls, sorry. No,
that's right. What I think the way that you can affect change as one of 435 is you join together with the other 20 or 30 people that are like-minded, and you say to leadership, this will not pass unless, for instance, we're not going to pass omnibus bills. We're not going to pass 2,000 or 3,000 page bills that we haven't had more than 2 hours to read.
Right.
This will not work. We're not going to play the game. We want legitimate governance. We want to be able to know what we're voting on. We want to have single subject votes. That's going to take care of part of it. We're not going to vote yes on any earmarks, any of that pork that mm-hmm. you know that tends to abound plentiful in D.C.
Right.
You start going with that, and then two, we're not going to do continuing resolutions. We're not going to raise the debt ceiling. So there are so many things that actually are substantial in getting to having a balanced budget. Once you have a balanced budget, then you can start trying to attack the overall $35 trillion debt. And that's not going to happen in my lifetime or your lifetime to get rid of that debt. But step one, do what it takes to get a balanced budget for that year so that finally we're not adding to the debt.
So I think that it's, to me, the biggest problem is education. And of course, that started decades ago when the Marxists took over our institutions, our public schools and universities. And they stopped teaching things like American history, world history, and economics. Mm-hmm. Basic economics, if you understand economics, you understand that there are two ways of taxing the people, right? One is directly saying, give us this money, either for whatever, sales tax, income tax, whatever it is. And the other way is to just print money out of thin air and then spend it, right? Because we have fiat currency. Nixon took us off the gold standard. So now we have this fiat currency, which means that it has value because the government says it has value. Mm-hmm. And how does printing more money, how does printing more $100 bills how do the people pay for that?
Right.
A lot of people don't understand how that actually works.
So it's a covert theft of savings. It hits the middle income. It hits seniors and middle income and low income the hardest. So, and that goes, that's part and parcel of the debt, because the more debt we take on, the more money that we print, the more money that we borrow, the more money that's in the system, which then increases the prices of all goods. So this debt, this spending problem that we've had is the biggest contributor, in my opinion, to inflation. And inflation again is a theft of our savings. It's a theft of our 401ks. It's a thief.
And so most people think of, when they think of inflation, they think of prices going up, right? But that's really not what inflation is it?
The prices going up is a manifestation
of the real problem. And right. The real problem is that the value of your dollar,
the value of the dollar is down going because down. The scarcity is decreased and the supply is increased. Yeah. Right.
So if as this becomes less valuable, it mm-hmm. takes more of these mm-hmm. to buy whatever it is that I want. So exactly. It's not the fact that the prices are going up, it's the fact that this is becoming worthless.
Right.
And there comes a point where it hits a mark of no return, right? And then we experience what other countries have experienced called
hyperinflation.
Hyperinflation,
right? And I think it doesn't take too many dominoes to fall, and we'll find ourselves in that situation. And again, what we've seen with supply chain disruptions, this is a big concern, very big.
So clearly, you understand the issues. I wish that we had more time to get into some of them a little bit more deeply, because I know that you could do that because I've heard you speak. But I want to thank you, Dr. Becker, for joining us on the show. Is there anything that you'd like to, any closing comments that you'd like to make?
Well, you know, I think the nuts and bolts of the situation is we can all agree America's in a pretty rough spot right now. If there is a chance to turn the ship around, it's not going to be by reelecting people that are status quo or electing people that are status quo. The only way we get out of this is to send people that are number one, principled, and number two will fight like hell for those principles. I believe that there's only one candidate in this race that fits those two objectives, and that's me, of course.
Well, I would agree with you from what I've seen and heard. So the choice is yours. Election day is coming. You vote first on June 11th to determine who the candidate is going to be on the Republican ticket. So in the primaries, you can't vote some Democrats, some Republicans. It's one or the other. You can't cross the lines or else they throw out your ballot.
I'd like to encourage everyone to go to rickbecker2024.com. Rickbecker2024.com. You can learn more about me.
Thank you, rickbecker2024.com. And Dr. Becker, when you're in town again, if you have the time, will you come back on the show?
I would love it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for coming. And remember to vote June 11th. And stay in your lane. And rickbecker2024.com.
All right. And again, our show today brought to you by Redemption Shield.
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%. Redemptionshield.com.
Yeah, I got to do is go to gfbestsource.com. At the bottom of the homepage, you click the shield to order today. Again, thank you to Dr. Rick Becker, David Waterman, and of course, Paul, the producer. Tomorrow, BT in the house, Bill Tyrell from Rumor Sports Bar and Casino. Love having him in. Of course, the big Kentucky Derby bash going on this Saturday. Yeah, something more for you to think about. Hey, have a great day, everybody. Remember to like, share, tag, and follow us. Hit that notification bell on your smartphone. You'll never miss a show that way. We all know the Grand Cities are grand. Grand Forks Best Source is giving them an identity again.